All right, you're back on the DFSR on the Overtime Media Network, broadcasting live from the Vivid Seats Lounge. I'm Doug Norrie, that is
James Davis.
And we are here on a Wednesday leading into Thanksgiving. Massive basketball slate here.
Massive.
Massive. So big, you can't even calculate it. I tried to calculate how big the slate was, and it was incalculable. But it's funny because, like, the NBA just did such weird stuff with the schedule. Like, Tuesday had two games that started at 8:30 and then a game at 9. So it's just a little bit weird when they were looking at that. And then every single team, it seems like, is playing on Wednesday. Nobody plays Thursday, which makes sense. I guess, like, they just gave up. Said, forget Thanksgiving. Everyone get Thanksgiving off. Football can have it. We'll be back again on Friday. And then there's like a random on Friday. There's a random noontime game between the Nets and the Celtics. And then a regular basketball slate. It's just a little bit weird with the scheduling here. But tons of games here on Wednesday. Do you think that, like, we see, I mean, this feels like it's going to be leading into the holiday. It feels like everyone's going to be around. Feels like, I mean, by everyone, I mean people that play DFS, not like, I don't know, whatever else. Do you feel like this is going to be like just one of the bigger slates of the year? It just feels like leading into the holiday makes me feel like there's just going to be a lot of people putting in lineups tonight.
Yeah, I guess it depends, because on one hand, like, I'll certainly be there putting in lineups, but I also remember being a young man and going out the night before Thanksgiving. So I don't know if people still do that. Obviously, at like age 37 with three kids, that's not on my to-do list for tonight to go out to the
local. You'll be there early, like, you'll be at the bar early so you can get home to hang out with your kids.
When I was at City Streets in East Windsor, New Jersey, you know, just putting in time, seeing all the old boys come in, talking about good times. Like, no, I probably won't be doing that tonight. But yeah, I'll be in front of this. This really is a massive slate. And I don't know if you noticed this too or if we've talked about it, but with it being Wednesday too, in the NBA shot on FanDuel, they have this $5,000 3-point bonus. Mm-hmm. So I think that's another interesting little wrinkle to these Wednesday slates now too. So yeah, a lot of fun tonight.
Okay, so we're going to roll through. We're going to try to focus on the DFS plays here. It's going to be a little bit more about the injury stuff and where you go. It's, you know, some slates, when we talk about this on the podcast, it's a little easier to know a clear path of what the lineups are going to look like, I think. I don't think that's the case right now. We're recording this at 8:30 in the morning, so there's still lots of news out there. So I think what we'll spend here is we'll go through game by game, talk about guys that you can put on your radar, and also just put on the radar in what situations we're going to be looking for in terms of where things might pivot one direction or another, because there is a decent amount of injury stuff here. So that's kind of the format we'll take here. It's a little different than other podcasts that we do in the sense that it's not, to me, in hitting calculate right now, things do not look even close to crystal clear. So Orlando goes in and plays Cleveland. That's a 7 o'clock game. Orlando still without Vooch, still without Aaron Gordon. Jonathan Isaac has been has really stepped into this role in terms of just, like, you know, a little bit more usage and some more minutes. They did see some uptick in guys like Markelle Fultz, and Evan Fournier's usage has gone up even though he couldn't hit a shot. Where do you put them, these Orlando guys, against Cleveland? Very bad defense. Kevin Love questionable right now. Very low total, but it feels like there might still be a little bit of value here on the Magic side.
Yeah, there might be. I think Isaac, you know, he was a guy we were really interested in playing at 6,700 when he walked into this situation. I think at 8,000, all that upside, is you're sort of priced into it. Not to say he can't do it. I mean, he did it in the Indiana and Toronto games, but I think that Detroit game is the type of performance you have to consider as a possibility too, where he only played 4x on this price, you know. And we've seen this a number of times. If your true rotation, which I think Isaac's is around 31 minutes a game, it's just really hard to sustain being an $8,000 or more player. Like, those extra 4 minutes increase the floor so dramatically. And for a guy too, he really relies a lot on the defensive stats. You know, 5 blocks and steals against Detroit, 6 against Indiana, 4 against Toronto. You miss 2 of those, and all of a sudden, you go from being a fine play to being sort of a disaster. So I think Isaac is a reasonable option, but very volatile. And, you know, like you said, on one of the biggest slates of the year, I don't know that that's where I'm going to start things.
On the Cleveland side, like I said, they're without Kevin Love. Kevin Love's questionable. He sat out the last two games. Larry Nance got the start. Larry Nance saw a ton of ownership, specifically last game, which even more than the one before when he got the spot start. He was awesome against the Nets. It was a really good matchup there. On a huge slate like this with a little bit of a price uptick, do you think – I feel like I'm ready to be off Nance. I'm only mentioning him because, like, the ownership was so high last time he came out, and he was really good. Like, he absolutely crushed it against the Nets. But I feel like at this point, even if Love were to sit again, I'm not sure I want to be there on Nance. I'm not interested in anyone else on Cleveland.
Yeah, I think that's – you're pretty much speaking my language here. Nance is a guy that we played two games ago at 5,700. like Isaac, though, you know, pushing 7,000 now, I just don't know what kind of upside is left here. I think it's possible that he's a good play. I think if it were a small slate, if it were a, you know, a Thursday slate, three-game, four-game slate, I think I'd be more interested. I think the floor is actually pretty high here. The floor is probably what he did against Portland, where he had around 29 fantasy points, and that's pretty reasonable. But on a huge slate like this, this is the first game on the slate. I'm hoping to do better for cash games. I think the upside, unquestionably, there for big tournaments. But I think for cash games, with 13 games left to go, I'm going to be in a wait-and-see mode here.
By the way, in the old, you're talking to a true professional here. As we were talking there, I by mistake closed out every single tab that I had open for the slate with all the research that I had going. You wouldn't even notice, except that I mentioned to brag about it, that I'm right back in the mix without everyone even noticing. That
incredible.
I just was absolutely panicking. Didn't even stop the podcast when I just, for some reason, hit the X button. Detroit goes in and plays Charlotte. This game has a 216.5 over under, which is, I'm mentioning this because this is really high for Detroit because Charlotte is terrible. Just one of the very best matchups you can get in terms of DFS. Really viability right now. Detroit is shortening up the rotations. Bruce Brown playing a lot. Langston Galloway actually playing a lot at the point guard position, starting at, you know, the nominal point guard. He's Blake. They still run so much stuff out of Blake. Where do you stand though when they're fully healthy? The price is up. Like, you're still maybe a value on Drummond, but it definitely doesn't get as much love when Blake's around here. I'm spending a little more time with Detroit here, mostly because the matchup is so good against Charlotte.
Yeah, and our system is curious about whether you should just run Blake out there, right? I mean, 7,000 now for this guy, who we've paid 10,000 for in the past in similar minutes. I know that a lot of Blake's value came from his explosiveness, and losing that explosiveness and being on the team with Drummond has really come at a cost of not only his points, but his rebounds too. 8 total rebounds in his last 63 minutes on the court is pretty lousy. I don't know. Like, I think certainly the names that you'll recognize on Detroit are interesting. Blake right now, though, is one of the main guys pushing our cash game lineups. Are you ready to do it? I mean, this would be that quandary where we would be asking, we would be there for the first time he did it this season. And I don't know if that's where we want to be on a 13-game slate. But what are your thoughts?
Now, in general, I hate the rebounding for him at this point in his career, which we've mostly built into his projection at this point. Like, we're still kind of feathering in baseline projections, but for the most part, the rebounds have been basically dumpstered on him. He was running really bad from three for a while, which was really crushing his scoring, which, by the way, if he's not going to rebound, he needs to score. He is a better three-point shooter than what he had been doing. He's kind of made up for it a little bit over the last couple games. He's not a guy on a huge slate. He's definitely not a guy I want to run into cash games because... One, there's no upside in the minutes at all, and I think that on a big slate, you need to have at least something built in that says, yes, we have him at 31 minutes, and he might play 35, but that's not the case with Griffin, right? Like, they're still pretty much monitoring the minutes, and I think when that's the case, I definitely want to be bearish on the projection because you're just not going to get the 35-minute game. Like, you're not going to get the overtime. You know what I mean? Like, it's so unlikely. As opposed to, I'm trying to think of an example of a guy that goes, like, Trae Young goes the other way, right? Like, if you give him 38 minutes... there's a world where he plays 42, right? Like, and if everything's rolling correctly, like, I get that those aren't one-to-one comparisons, but that's kind of where Blake Griffin is not going to be a guy I want to run in cash games at all.
Yep.
On the Charlotte side, and I don't think I'm interested in really anything else here on the Detroit side. Drummond's a little bit interesting, but I think that at 9,300, mostly because Charlotte is so bad. On the Charlotte side, guys like Rozier, guys like Graham, Miles Bridges at times. Detroit is not a good team either. Little bit of a pace down matchup here. Any interest in anything on the Charlotte side?
Not on a big slate. PJ Washington lost his minutes too. He was an early season kind of DFS darling. But right now, the Charlotte guys are absolutely nowhere near our cash game lineups. And if you're considering them, like maybe Miles Bridges can sniff it a little bit. But if you're considering these guys, it's probably going to be just for big tournaments.
Yeah, no. And by the way, no other real injury news and notes here outside of things that have sort of been known for quite some time with both of these teams. Utah goes in and plays Indiana. Game is a very low total. It should be expected pace down for both teams, or it's just low pace for both teams. Utah is about the best defensive team in basketball right now. They're third overall right now. Indiana's eighth. When you see two pretty slow teams with good defensive matchups, I don't want to say skip all outright because this price always matters with these things, but there's no real injury stuff here either. I guess maybe outside of Tony Bradley.
Well, Gobert. Tony Bradley's been pretty serviceable in the 22 minutes he's been getting, scoring more than a fantasy point a minute. The price has come up on him though, right? So I think you could have probably gotten away with something grabbing him after that New Orleans game when the price was still cheaper at 4,800 on FanDuel. What am I really doing playing 20 minutes of Tony Bradley on a million game slate. So yeah, I don't see too many viable DFS options here.
One thing I will say, and we'll move on from this game, is that if you're using full season stats on defense in general, Gobert is such a difference maker that they do take a pretty big hit on defense with him not being there. The going from Gobert to Tony Bradley is a massive hit on your defensive expectation, right? And I think that's like the one case, if you wanted to say there's, you know, that's where people played Giannis the other night against Utah, and I think it was probably mostly correct because even though we didn't, but it was mostly correct, I think, because the loss of Gobert is one of those true guys that, like, going from him to anybody else, it's just how good he is. So I guess that's more like the case for, like, a Sabonis and Miles Turner. And on a big slate, I'm just not sure you're getting away with much on the prices on any of these guys. All right, Sacramento goes in and plays Philly. Embiid is coming off the worst game easily of his career. Didn't score any points. He was like 0 for 11 from the field. Easily, like I said, the worst game of his career. 9.5-point home favorites here, 211.5 over under. When Philly's fully healthy, it's one of those situations like I'm just not interested in it from DFS, right? Like they're just too spread out. There's too many good players here. If someone sits, I'm all for it. Like, you know, hit Sid Simmons, we play Nato, and maybe Josh Richardson. Embiid sits, obviously, you go all the way into Al Horford. For the way they stand right now, fully healthy, I'm not interested, and I kind of feel the same way up against Sacramento. They're also running into a terrible defensive matchup here.
Yeah, Rashawn Holmes revenge game, buddy. All that revenge he wants against these guys. Get ready for it. Yeah, I feel the same way. Philly, oftentimes with good teams, you'll see this where there's a consistency around the minutes, and that brings everyone's price up. Philly gets it both ways, though, because when they're all healthy, there is consistency in the minutes. But then when Embiid sits, everyone's ownership skyrockets and their performance skyrockets. So the guys like Horford, Tobias Harris, a lot of these players are priced as though Embiid's out because they can't have... I think the algorithms have sort of adjusted for the situation where Embiid's out and then all the Philly guys are plays like it was early this season. So yeah, you have high prices across the board, and on a fully healthy unit, that's not exactly where you want to be. On the Sacramento side, I think one player some people might talk themselves into is Corey Joseph, just because he's been playing 34 to 35 minutes a game on just a $5,000 price tag. The floor has sort of been there, but he's just not as involved in the offense as the point guard label would suggest. So I don't think I would really want to be there myself.
Bogdan Bogdanovich is probable right now. He's like the one guy. Like if he sat, then I think we could redistribute some of those minutes, like Joseph, Buddy Hield, stuff like Bijalisa, like that. But I think Bogdan's gonna play. And again, when he takes such a big usage piece out of the second unit too. So again, that's just mostly just speaking to the, you know, where we want to be from a DFS perspective. Last 7 o'clock game, Brooklyn goes in and plays Boston. Boston, 7-point home favorites here. The news here is that after the very scary collision that Kemba took the other night where it looked really bad, it was one of those things where he took a knee to the head, and it didn't look that bad. It was one of those things where his reaction looked so bad. Like, he just kind of collapsed to the ground. You're like, oh my God, he's like fucking paralyzed or something like that. So, like, I don't... But the fact that he's actually going to be back and playing in this game is sort of remarkable to me. I think from a Boston perspective, the price has all climbed up a little bit with no Kemba. I don't think you want to be there, except for Enes Kanter. Is 25 minutes out of Enes Kanter big enough against a Brooklyn team that still really lets it up to opposing centers? Is it enough at 4,500 on FanDuel to consider him? I do not think he's going to play more than 25 minutes. I think you're getting, you know, in the old, that's what you're going to get. You're getting 25 minutes of him, and that's going to be it. Is that a good enough? And still would ranks as like an ideal matchup against Brooklyn against opposing centers.
Yeah, I think that's always the rub, right? It's like when you get these super high points per minute guys and you get them in great matchups, you can realize incredible upside. Like have they said the max is 25 minutes, or is that just what we're going off based on the Sacramento game?
That's what I'm going off the Sacramento game. Last time he started, that was what he played too. Like, he just, like, yeah, 25, 26. He's not going to go out there and play 31 is my point. Like,
did you see that his line in those two games where he had 25 minutes were identical? 13, 9 with 2 assists.
Well, this is what I mean. Like, you know what you're getting, and this is a great matchup. Like, I think that actually from a safety perspective, like, you just know he's going to give you 5x plus on this.
Buckets and boards all day. Like, yeah, I think he's fine. I think you could, you know, I could get talked into it. I think 25 minutes is not a lot, but it's a lot when you're going up against Brooklyn, and it's a lot when it's totally safe. I think he's probably not at risk foul trouble in this game either with what Brooklyn presents down low and Brooklyn's ability to get in the lane and cause trouble. So I think really from top to bottom, it looks like a pretty solid spot to run Cantor back out there.
The only other injury news here is Kyrie obviously still continues to sit. The Nets have really rallied around him as a host of a Nets podcast. I've been floored by their 5-1.
Wait, you
Kyrie
host a Nets
six.
Podcast? What's it called?
We Got Nets, buddy, and that's a free plug. I'm not going to pay for that plug. We Got Nets podcast. If you like the Nets, you want to hear me and Adam talk about the Nets all day. I've had a lot of fun doing that podcast, by the way. But the Kyrie.
I know you love Adam. Adam's your new best friend. One guy I like on Brooklyn is Spencer Dinwiddie. Man, we've run him so many times, and the floor is outrageous since Kyrie's been out. He's scoring. He's passing the ball. The team looks like they're having fun, making everyone wonder if they needed Kyrie in the first place.
Stop it with this.
Fair. Kyrie's a much better player than Dinwiddie, but Dinwiddie's been so good, man. It's been fun to watch, and the floor is nice and reasonable. It's not a great spot against Boston, obviously, but just wanted to give a shout-out to my guy Spencer there.
Jared Allen coming off a 2020 game with DeAndre Jordan out the other day. I think his minutes floor does go up. This is a situation he's not going to get played off the court against Boston in a way that is sometimes right. With other centers. They don't really have anyone behind him anyway, like Claxton. So I think the minutes floor on Allen is actually pretty high if DeAndre sits. If DeAndre plays, I'm not as interested.
Yeah.
But we've seen
it's too expensive if DeAndre.
But DeAndre, dude, real quick, just because of the Nets thing, Jared Allen is a top 10 win shares guy this season for the Nets. Like, there was debate about whether he should be starting over DeAndre or not. I know among Nets people, which I thought was absolutely ridiculous. He's been like among the very best players in the entire league. Like, his win shares per 48 are, he's a top 10 player. And the guys above him are like the names that you would think, like Harden and Giannis and Luka and stuff like that. So anyway, my boy Jared Allen getting it done, him and Dinwiddie. All right, let's move on. Actually, real quick, I hit a sponsor. Vivid Seats app. If you're getting tickets to the game, you want to go to one of these massive Thanksgiving night, Wednesday before Thanksgiving games, or just any ticket in general, Vivid Seats app, you got to download it. Use the promo code OVERTIME, just like the network we're on, OVERTIME, automatically enrolled into the rewards program. Going to get you up to $100 back on your first ticket purchase. Makes ticket buying super easy. You get to see exactly what you're going to get when you sit down in that seat, the views. You're going to know if it's a good deal or not because it's marked on the app. Vivid Seats app, download it. Use the promo code OVERTIME. If you're doing anything with tickets, it's a must.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
All right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, 7:30 games. Knicks go in and play Toronto. Toronto, 10.5-point home favorites here. Knicks, the injury news is RJ Barrett is questionable right now. He might even be ducked down to doubtful. Frank Ntilikina is questionable. Kevin Knox is doubtful. Their Knicks are a total and utter mess. Don't have any idea what's going on with this team. And if we had a bunch of injury guys here, is this a team that you'd feel comfortable enough projecting out? Like, let's just say they all sit. Like Bobby Portis of the world, Marcus Morris, guys like this. Like, are these guys you would still, at their prices, be willing to run into a Raptors team that's probably going to absolutely kill them? And then going the other way, the Raptors, guys like Van Vliet and Siakam, they just play a ton, right? Like, OG plays a ton. Like, they're continuing to deal with injuries. Ibaka's out and Malcolm Miller's out too. Like, what are your thoughts here on this game?
Yeah, I think on the Knicks side, I'm not super interested in it. I just think I can do better on a really big slate. And even if it's one of those situations where they're sort of out of minutes, with the Raptors being 10.5-point favorites, which is arguably low, and just good, and the fact that these Knicks guys that you're considering, it doesn't remind me that much of like the Golden State situation earlier this season, where you're like, these guys are all 4,000 and less, and there's just 240 minutes that you have to apply to these guys somehow. Like with Marcus Morris, like he's already pretty expensive, right? And I know that he's been fine on this price, and if you can pencil him in for more minutes, you might be able to get there, but is he going to really do a lot better than what he's been doing recently, around 23 points and five boards? Like, I don't think so. No effort on the defensive end really for him. I just can't see wanting to run him into a slow pace, good defense team like Toronto. So I can't really consider the Knicks, I don't think. Siakam a little overpriced for me, but I do like Fred VanVleet and OG. I think both of those guys still maintaining some value, and with Van Vliet in particular just bringing an outrageously high floor. So I think there's definitely some stuff to like on the Toronto side. And as I'm one of the tiebreakers for me is I'm sort of breaking down these absolutely big slates, I'm certainly trying to shoot the moon on upside, but I'm definitely filing away guys like Fred Van Vliet, who I can sort of plug in at that $8,000 price tag and just know that I can get those 40 points like at some point. And it hasn't opened up this way just yet, but it probably will, where we just have all these punts available to us. Guys like Van Vliet, I think, bring a sneaky level of value just on the basis of getting those 38 minutes and 40 fantasy points. So
that's what I meant, like the opposite of guys like, I forget who I mentioned about this before. Oh, Blake, right? Like you can just get 40 minutes out of Siakam and Van Vliet. Like they just, that's the way that Toronto's playing. I get that it's built into their price, sort of, like, but maybe just not enough when you talk about absolute floor. And I think I'm with you that on a big slate, knowing a player's floor is pretty important. And I think that from the Toronto perspective, those two guys in particular are just so safe at this point that they're just outside of foul trouble for like Siakam, which is at a time a problem for him. Outside of foul trouble, you're really feeling pretty good about it. That's the only 7:30 game, by the way. They get into 8 o'clock games. Clippers going to play Memphis. Clippers on the back-to-back. There's no official news right now, but they basically said Kawhi's not playing any back-to-backs, and he played last night against Dallas. So I believe he is going to sit here. Again, he's listed as doubtful, but I think that's just speculative doubtful. I don't think it's been an official piece. I will say that this game luckily is early, and the Clippers have been pretty good with news like this, so I think we will just know. If he sits, how much do we want to go? Because Memphis is an awesome matchup here. They're just basically one of the best matchups you can get. They play pretty fast and pretty bad defense. Paul George, Lou Will, Montrezl, like, where do we stand with these guys? Like, do we want to just lock in three Clippers or something like that and say this has an incredible floor for cash games?
I think so. I think George especially, like the fantasy points per minute have just been crazy on him so far. And that I'm still holding out hope from that Boston game that they're willing to play him more than the 30 minutes or so a game that they've been playing him so far. A game where Kawhi were to sit, you would think that number would go up a little bit. I definitely think he's in consideration there. And just the extra shots and usage that would come, I think... it breaks one of my rule of thumbs, you know, paying $9,600 for a guy on 30 minutes, but I think it could still potentially be worth
it. And by the way, on the back-to-back, they didn't get pressed last night because they kind of blew Dallas out. So like he only played 29 minutes last night. So I think from a...
Yeah, but he only plays like 31 minutes anyway, so I don't know how differently they would see that, but I think one way or the other, I think it's probably fine. I think Lou will too. I mean, if Kawhi were to sit, I think you could see Williams, you know, we saw earlier this season, he'll play 36 minutes when he gets his number called, and in a game that's going to be really up and down, that also really suits his style too. I think one of the things about, you know, both with Kawhi and George, they just don't really need to play an up and down style. Both those guys really excel in the half court when things slow down. But Lou Will and Montrezl, I think, could both potentially benefit from an up pace game against Memphis, and one where they don't have to just wait for Kawhi to limp down the court to pass him the ball. So we'll see how it goes.
I think specifically on DraftKings, you're going to see these guys are all pretty underpriced. Like George at 86 will probably be a chalk play. Even Patrick Beverley at 5,000 is kind of interesting. Lou Will, he was pretty highly owned last night. I know it was a two-game slate, so a little different. At 6,900, I think you'd pretty happily play him at that number too. So I think there's just such a floor on having specifically Paul George and Lou Will. Like, if you play those two guys specifically at their current price points, I think you do, again, like what we said, like lock in a pretty high floor, because that's a lot of the usage on the team between those two guys. Like, that's going to be most of their shots. But between those two guys and Harrell, that's going to be most of this team's points in a really good matchup. So I think that's one that, you know, if you saw two Clippers in your lineups when all things were all said and done, I think you're feeling pretty good about it. Memphis guys, you can't do anything with these guys at this point. The only way that they'd be relevant here is if Ja Morant does sit. He took a bad fall the other day and continued to play, but there's some chance that he sits. If he sat, I think you could run Tyus Jones out as a punt play and feel okay about it. And that's really the only thing I would even consider on draft or on with the Memphis. They just don't. Their guys play 29 to 30 minutes, and that's it. Like, there's no upside at all on the minutes. And like, even guys like Jaren Jackson is just an absolute and utter foul box. The guy can all he can do is. I actually did fouls per minute the other day. A little bit behind going into one game, then he committed six fouls in 15 minutes and just instantly shot himself into the most fouls per minute in the NBA. So that's kind of what he's known for at this point. All right, let's keep rolling. Miami goes into place. Houston, definitely a game that if you are around tonight, if you like basketball, and I know people don't love the Harden style play, I think this is definitely a tune in kind of like league pass game that you want to tune in for. From a fantasy perspective, I'm wondering your thoughts though. High total, and it should be. Houston does let up a lot of points. They score a lot of points also. It's a 116.5 total for the Rockets and 110.5 for Miami. Butler Harden stack? Like, where do you want to stand on this game? 227 is one of the highest totals of the slate.
Yeah, I think for starters, Harden just doing unusual things this season.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Incredibly efficient. And recently, too, he's kind of slid into just like absorbed Russell Westbrook's powers. I don't know, like 9 rebounds last game, 8 rebounds against the Clippers, topping 40 minutes in each of those games. I kind of don't know what to do with the Rockets when they're behaving this way and giving him such incredible amounts of minutes. They seem a team, like a team that's really moved by it being a relevant matchup where they want to make a statement or whatever. And I honestly don't know if that favors Harden in this matchup or not. I'd say that Miami probably, from their perspective, a lower tier matchup. So I don't know that it's a night that you need to prioritize Harden, but he's still pretty damn cheap, right? Compared to where he's been in the past and what he's doing currently at 11.6. So I think he's absolutely going to be in play, especially as the punts start rolling in as the day progresses here. Outside of him, I mean, who are you saying that you're really excited about? Like, Jimmy Butler, I know, is kind of dancing around our FanDuel lineups. He has not paid value on average on this price this season, but you can argue there's been some weird rotation stuff recently with some bizarre game scripts against especially these bad teams like Charlotte, yeah, Chicago, and Cleveland.
That's so kind of where
are
I
you
am
penciling him just right back in for 37 minutes? Because if so, then I think he's a play, but I understand why that might give some of our chatters and optimizer users some pause there.
No, I thought about this one a lot, actually, specifically around his minutes, and this is a game where I'm like 36 to 37 feels like what they want to do with him, especially in this matchup, right? Like, this is a premium matchup. Yeah. Miami's been very good so far this season in terms of overall record. I think they see
they're
a path where they're – what's that?
They're 12-4.
Yeah, I mean, they're very good. I think they see a path where they're just like one of the better teams in the NBA, and they play in the East, so getting these West matchups are games they want to just probably like put a stamp on. If I'm going to be aggressive – like, this is a game, again, I'm going to make this the theme, a game where I'm going to get someone maybe a little cheaper because of the minutes who actually could maybe trend to like 38, 39 minutes in a matchup like this. Yeah. I could see it with Butler. I don't think it's likely to happen, but I can see it, right? Like, things going well, game's close, his defense is pretty paramount to have against guys like Harden. I think that this is the game where you like really could shoot some upside. He is a really nice price on both sites. So Butler is, yeah, he's 8,000 on FanDuel or DraftKings. I love that price on DraftKings. You maybe want to, you know, grab some minutes out of Daniel House at 4,500 and hope he hits some threes with some defensive stats. I don't mind that either. Not like a core cash game play for me, but we have seen, you know, 34 minutes out of him, 35 minutes, and we'll do some stuff. So that's kind of where I'm looking in this game. But I really, in terms of like the high floor plays and buying him a little low, I do see Butler as sort of checking that box. Another 8 p.m. game, Atlanta goes in and plays Milwaukee. Milwaukee, huge favorites here, 14.5 points. They are going to get Chris Middleton back, though. He's going to be on a minutes restriction. Let's just real quick talk about blowout, our theories on blowouts, and then move past this game. Trae Young right now in our top overall lineup. It's very early, but I get why. But also, they're 15-point underdogs. Do we want to tick minutes down for guys like Trae and Gianna specifically because the blowout risk is real? Because these two guys are about as good a play as you can get, considering just who they are in general. And this number is so far beyond any other line in this game. Where do we want to land in terms of blowout here?
I can't play Trae Young. I don't think that makes any sense. Again, like just on a slate where I just have infinite opportunities, I can be a little bit picky. And I know that Young has been good and he's been solid on this price point. But the combination of his ankle being tweaked and being 15-point underdogs to the Bucks, I just, there's too many spots. Like you've seen it with him recently. He can play 30 or 31 minutes. And I just can't imagine a scenario where they're losing by 15 and he plays 31 minutes and he winds up being a $9,600 player. So it's not, I guess I should rephrase, it's not outside the realm of possibility, but I think if I ran him, I would be thinking, I'd be really sweating that first quarter score, right? Like if it was 32-17 at the end of the first quarter, yeah, I'd be pretty upset for the rest of the night. And I don't think that's where I want to be. So I don't think I'll play any Hawks here. Giannis, I think, is interesting just because he's doing things nobody's ever seen before. I think right now he has the highest, if the season were to end today, and it isn't going to, it would be the best PER season of all time. And that's pretty good. Yeah. So at 31, 14, and 6, he's doing stuff that no mortal has ever done with a basketball. Put up 50, 14, and 6 with zero turnovers against the Jazz.
So, that's what I mean, dude. It's unbelievable. Like, this guy's unbelievable. he's one of those ones that's like, he could get the 60 in 30 minutes. 60 fantasy points in 30 minutes and not kill you against this Hawks team that's really bad on defense. So he's going to be one that will... I'm going to be around tonight, buddy, on Wednesday. Now I'm going to promise you that. Usually you,
all right,
fly,
let's go.
You fly Wednesday solo. This will be one that we talk about. I'm going to move on from this game, but because we have a bunch more to go, but we're going to run.
I want just a quick thing on Giannis. In the Atlanta game, he did only play 30 minutes when they faced off on the 20th. So that was only 7 days ago. And there is a path that the Bucks also only won by 8 in that game. So there are paths where Giannis plays fewer than his max minutes. They only won by 14 against Detroit. He played 27 minutes. So he is pretty volatile on the minutes front. And I don't want to be the guy recommending against playing Giannis. He's an absolute force of nature. He's the type of guy you won't even be able to describe him to the NBA fans 15 years from now who are like, what was Giannis like in his prime? It'll be this weird, embarrassing situation for both sides where you're trying not to be too effusive and they're kind of being overly skeptical, but again, embarrassing themselves because they won't understand what's going on here. He is a truly incredible player, but I don't know if you want to... Again, 12-7 is a lot. I will say, though, as those punts start rolling in, if I had to pick between like him and Harden, let's say, I would probably want to lean Giannis.
Interesting. I think I lean Harden, but that's one's close for me. And I'm also so worried about the blowout. It's not a talent thing. I'm so worried about the blowout. A sneaky high total, only because if you historically think about one of these teams, you wouldn't think about them this way. Minnesota is going in to play the Spurs. Mm-hmm. This game is a 229 total. Spurs have been so bad this year. There's just no other way around. The Spurs are terrible on defense. They're one of the worst defensive teams in basketball this season. They play at a moderate pace, 103.3, which is right around middle of the pack. But the defense is 27th in terms of defensive efficiency this season. The only teams below them are Atlanta, Golden State, and Washington. So that's the current state of the Spurs. And when you look at that, I know in the past, running guys into the Spurs has never been a good idea for like the last 2 decades. Okay. So even before DFS immemorium, time immemorium, you just don't want to do it. But this is a season you can get away with it. And Karl-Anthony Towns is like not all that expensive. And Karl-Anthony Towns is freaking awesome. He's averaging 27 points, 13 rebounds, 4 assists, a block and a half, and a steal in 33 minutes. Another one of these guys. It's not always going to be, it doesn't always happen, but there are minutes upsides with him at times when the game gets close. Where do you rank Towns in here in like that Giannis Harden group of guys that if this was ended up being the ultimate payoff, would this be where we wanted to be? Because when he gets it rolling against a team that doesn't have much in the way of defensive guys that can stop him, he has right as much upside as anybody in the game.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, picturing what Towns is going to do against Poeltl and Trey Lyles is, it's going to be a sight for sore eyes if you have Towns, and it's going to be a tough fade if you don't.
Right.
He's been excellent on these prices recently, even in a way that Giannis and Harden haven't been. And, he's also been another one who's arguably been a victim of some weird game scripts. And we know that he can play 35 to 38 minutes when things are breaking right for him with the Wolves as 2.5-point dogs. By the way, how much respect do the Spurs need to get? I think, I don't know if we've talked about MyBookie recently, but if you want to head on over to MyBookie and grab the Wolves plus 2.5 as a team that's 9-8 this season against your 6-12 Spurs.
By the way,
be my guest.
In the old, intrigue piece, DeMar DeRozan and Deontay Murray like unfollowed everyone from the Spurs on Instagram. I know people love looking at this stuff to like see what it means, like reading tea leaves and stuff. But they said the last time DeMar did that was right before he got traded from the Raptors. Like the last time he just unfollowed everybody. So if you think that it's open season on the trade block for these guys, yeah, I love stuff like
that.
What
an era that we live in. People put their houses up for sale, but the Spurs. So 6-12, which is, you're like, okay, it's early. You know, it's 18 games in. It's something, but it's, you know, 20%, but it's, things could turn. They're also 4-14 against the spread this year. And I think that's like where you start to look at it and you're like, man, Vegas has just been giving the Spurs and the public has been giving the Spurs way too much respect. This is not your grandfather's Spurs team. And they just generally suck. So I am happy to take Towns. I love the Wolves going up against them here. Yeah, it just looks like a really, really good spot to me. And I will say though, on the flip side, DeRozan, just so we, before we move on past this game, DeRozan, he kind of reminds me of Fred VanVleet. They're the exact same price. They do pretty much the exact same thing. If I had to pick between the two, because I think some people will be in this position, I would take Fred VanVleet. I think DeRozan's minutes are a little bit more variable. And even though the production has sort of come out in the wash over the course of the whole season, it hasn't always been that way. So I'll lean VanVleet there. And I understand if people want to run DeRozan too.
Yeah, I see that too. And there is some minutes upside on him. And again, like Minnesota's a good matchup too. Minnesota's really bad on defense as well. Yeah. So they rank, actually, maybe is Minnesota not as bad as I thought they were? I was trying to find their defensive efficiency. Maybe it's more middle of the pack. Yeah, they're 14th. They played a pretty fast pace though. 107 might be the fastest pace in the league. Yeah, it is. So they play really
Spurs, fourth worst in the league, by the way, defensive efficiency.
That's so what I mean. Like, it's crazy. Like, they're slotted in with these bad teams. Speaking of defensive efficiency and offensive efficiency, Washington, they're going into Phoenix. They're on the back-to-back. Phoenix is 8.5-point favorites. Washington has the second best offensive efficiency this season and the worst defensive efficiency. Like, it's such a weird team, man. They just like get it all done, completely done on one end of the court and just can't do a single thing on the other side. Ricky Rubio is going to be back for this game. He's probable. He's a guy, he's so cheap, and he's been out for so long. I don't know. And like, by the way, another guy is Kaminsky. I'm not exactly sure where to land with some of these Suns guys. Kaminsky, very cheap, still starting for Baines. Hasn't played a ton of minutes, though. He's like trended up to 29. He's only 4,000 on FanDuel. Like, the reason I'm mentioning is because, one, power forward is always problematic. Two, this matchup is as good as you can get against the Wizards right here, right? Like, we want to stack guys when possible. And I'm just like not sure I totally see who that is on the Suns, right? Like, Booker's priced pretty high. You're getting Rubio back. You're not sure where he's going to land ultimately with the minutes. And I'm not sure where to land with Kaminsky on the minutes either. Sarge either. Like, I just, you know what I mean? Like, I want
to
play.
I was going to say, the issue I would have with running Kaminsky is that they do seem to be leaning into Sarge a little bit. Now, Kaminsky was in foul trouble last game, so it's just kind of
Diallo played a ton, too. Check Diallo played a ton off the bench.
I think what we're trying to learn right now, or what we're starting to learn, is that it's probably too questionable on a huge slate like this. Like, I think if I had Kaminsky at 4,000 and that was like my cheap play that I was hoping to unlock the rest of my lineups, not to say that it's unworkable, but it would be concerning to me. And I think there's a strong argument that you could just do better. And that being said, Kaminsky running up against this Washington team, the very worst defense in the league, and probably one, you know, they've been pretty effective offensively, but I don't know that it's the type of front court that you'd be worried about running Kaminsky into foul trouble or something like that, right? So I think it's a close call. Maybe this one, you'll have to hop in our members-only chat room over at dfsr.com/deals. You might have to get my opinion later today because right now I see that he's showing up in lineups. I totally get it. And my gut tells me that I'm hoping to do better.
I'll tell you right now, we're pretty bearish on these minutes, like 27 out of Kaminsky, 20, even down to 26, he'd be in lineups. Rubio at 29 minutes. He's in DraftKings 1 at 5,500. This is going to be a really tough call here. I think like this is going to be one because the matchup's so good. These guys are coming so cheap, and there's maybe just too many question marks. But like 5,500 for Rubio, guy only needs to play like 27 minutes to get there. Again, this matchup is so good, right? And so
I like Rubio on DraftKings there. I think Kaminsky, the minutes are probably a little high. I think probably 24 to 25 has been more the scene for him since Baines went down. And with Sarge having such a good game last game too, I'd be concerned there too. So I don't know. I
wish they would just move Diallo into the starting lineup, and then we could just answer our questions because we just play him because he's a permanent guy. But I just don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
All right, let's three more games to go. This is the big one. Lakers going and play New Orleans. Revenge game narratives. The biggest one in the history of basketball.
The whole team of New Orleans.
The whole team of New Orleans versus Anthony Davis. I sent out a tweet the other day, which I thought would get him a little more traction. That I was wondering if Anthony Davis.
Buddy, you didn't get enough likes. The little hearts next.
I didn't. I almost never care about this.
Who did this to you?
I wondered if Anthony Davis was going to make a mid-game trip to the locker room for old time's sake, for the Pelicans. There you go.
You think he heads to the wrong locker room like Porzingis did when he was in New York?
Yeah, exactly. He's like, oh man, it's like just.
I'm feeling a little gassy. He just starts walking into the.
Just like without realizing it. All right. Where do you think people land? This game is a 230.5 over-under. Lakers are not overwhelming favorites. They've been really so good this season. This tandem is looking very scary between LeBron and AD. And people love the revenge piece of this. I'm not interested in the New Orleans side. The Lakers are such a good defense. I don't think you need to, on a big slate, you don't need to run the Pelicans guys in. But where do you think people end up landing on Anthony Davis here, going in, playing his old team? Power forward's a tough one to kind of figure out. The rebounds for him have been all over the place. It's very, like, he kind of has had to get there on defensive stats in a way that I don't really love for cash games. And I just think that people, I guess 12 and 11 in the last 3 years. Davis's rebounds are 12, 4, 11, 7, 1 in his last 5 games. Like, you need the blocks and steals to get there. But where do you think people land on Davis in the revenge game narrative that we just hate to hear about? But this one actually has my ears perked up a little bit.
With Davis, I would say this is one that I actually think the player might want revenge a little bit, even though it's like kind of Davis was being the baby and pushing for the trade and not playing that much. I do think, though, that there's a little bit of that extra FU mode that he could bring to this. And listen, stuff like rebounds and defensive stats, those are effort-based stats. And I think that, you know, if he's only getting one rebound in a blowout of Atlanta, that's kind of understandable, right? Like, he's like, whatever, dude, we're just going to win regardless. I got to save the miles on these legs. Going up against New Orleans, I think it's going to be a slightly different spot. I'm also, like, curious to hear what you think about this line again, right? Like, the Lakers, 6-point favorites. They lead the NBA, they're second to Milwaukee in the NBA in point differential. Going up against a New Orleans team that has a minus 4.4 point differential. So, on average, like, on a neutral court, just raw point differential would suggest the Lakers are 13.3 points better than New Orleans. I guess, like, is New Orleans this crazy place to play that's going to swing it 7 points? I don't think so. I think taking the Lakers in the points here feels like an absolute no-brainer to me.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the Lakers are a little bit undersold because their schedule has not been that good this season. And I think that this is the case. This is the other one we're going to talk about leading into the lock, is like where to land on Anthony Davis specifically, I think. I got some background noise going in here. There's not going to be anything I'm going to be able to do to get it out of this podcast, so I just want to let everyone know, sorry about this. It's an outside thing. I'm just not going to be able to stop it. So if you hear this drone in the background for these last two games, many apologies, but I'm not going to be able to get this out as I'm talking. I think the Davis thing is where we're going to probably have a lot of question marks, and if ultimately we landed on him, I think I'd be okay with it, and if we didn't, I think I'd be fine there too. Give me your quick thought. I'm going to try to jump off this microphone because this thing's just so loud in the background. Okay, give me your thoughts here quick on OKC and Portland. Looks like Portland's getting fully healthy, and give me your thoughts here on Carmelo.
Oh, okay. A lot of things to answer at once, my friend. So, starting on Carmelo, I notoriously didn't play him in that Milwaukee game when he was chalk, but I did play Mikal Bridges, who outscored him by 1.3 points. So it did work out in the end, but it was a little bit of a sweat. I think Melo's like sort of back, right? 25-8-2 against the Bulls. I almost called him the Bears, good Lord. Against the Bulls. I think he is legit with an asterisk. So I think he is here. He's going to be a positive contributor to Portland. I think it's a little bit bananas to want to run him at 5,800 on FanDuel. Like, I just don't. Like, that's the exact kind of play I would not want to make. I think everything has gone well for him in his return. And even still, in that middle game there against Cleveland, he still only had 21 fantasy points in 34 minutes. So I think that it's a bubble waiting to burst on Melo. I think he'll settle in as sort of like a true value $5,000 fantasy player. And I'm not going to pay a premium for him against Oklahoma City here. Other guys kicking around this game. SGA is a guy our system is sort of keyed in on. The price has come down considerably. It's just down to 6,900. He had a few really bad games, including his hashtag revenge game against the Clippers. But I think the talent is still there. And I think he's kind of rounding into one of these guys. And this happens often with young guys where he'll be good in his good matchups. And it'll be a tough sledding for him in his bad one. Portland so far this season, kind of not qualifying as a full-on good matchup, but they're not terrible either. They're 20th in overall defensive efficiency with a reasonable pace. So I think you can take SGA there. And I don't know if it's where you want to land for cash games. Again, it kind of seems middle of the road to me, but these are kind of the names that are cropping up for me right now.
All right, let's finish this off with Chicago and Golden State. This game does not have a line yet. I guess they're waiting on Draymond news. Take that back. It's 216.5. It just came in with the Bulls, 3-point favorites. I don't trust a single thing about the Bulls, even though this is a great matchup against Golden State. Like, the teams, like, Zach LaVine gets basically benched the game before, then goes off for like 40 points, and the Wendell Carter Jr. Lauri Markkanen just doesn't play anymore. Like, I don't have any clue what's going on with him. Like, they start Shaquille Harrison, but not really, because Chandler Hutchinson comes in. The Bulls are a full-blown mess, so I have no interest there. But the Golden State has been running very tight rotations without Draymond. Like, they've been only play 8 guys, basically. And Draymond's one of these guys. Like, if he played on DraftKings, I think he'd be like almost a lock, because he's like, I don't know, 5,600 or something like that. Yeah, he's 5,700. If he was playing, he's like the easiest DraftKings play ever, right? Because like, he's just like, has a triple double right in him. They still kind of run the whole offense through him. And I just don't think we'll have the news. And without him, though, I mean, like, the minutes safe enough. Even Spellman's like 24 minutes off the bench. The reason I mention him is because you can kind of consider him at 4,200 at a weak power forward position. Give me your quick thoughts here on Warriors before we get out of here.
Yeah, the Warriors are kind of lousy with power forward options too. I mean, Marcus Chris has been seeing minutes and producing. Pascal has been fine. I think if Draymond were to return, you certainly have to probably get rid of the rest of the Golden State guys, because with Draymond being out for 3 games and being... he has a very unique impact on the game from the power forward position, and that, like you said, they already run a significant portion of the offense through him, even when Curry's there. And when Curry's not there, you have to think they just view him as by far the best option. So, I think it would be – this is just a full-on wait and see. I think if Draymond returns, I'm not super interested in any of these other guys. If he's out again, then I think mostly these players wind up being interesting big tournament options. The one potential – I guess exception to that rule might be Kai Bowman. I don't know what your thoughts are on him, but last 2 games, averaging 37 minutes and about 40 fantasy points. Is Kai Bowman legit? I mean, he's almost 6,000 now on FanDuel, but unlike Carmelo Anthony, like, we've seen, at least on a per minute basis, this has sort of been who he's been for this season, like around that fantasy point per minute when he's been out there. What are your thoughts on Bowman? Is it too expensive on FanDuel? Just terrible if
you're gonna get insane. Yeah, you're gonna get insane amount of background noise here. There's nothing I can do about it. Bowman, I like the minutes upside if Draymond's not there. He's actually a good, like, just like was like a good season long ad in terms of overall fantasy stuff, because I think the minutes are there. He and Burks, I kind of view as sort of high floor, but they need to score. So that's my thoughts on Bowman here. Buddy, hit us with the closing remarks here. I'm gonna get out of here because there's noise in the background.
All right, buddy, you enjoy. The cleaning people that are helping out at the place that you're staying right now. And as always, you guys can head on over to dfsr.com/deals. We'll get you started with a free 1-week trial to our projection system for the NBA, the NHL, and the NFL. And that covers all sports. So unlike the other folks out there that are charging you individually for separate subscriptions, we've been too lazy to set that up, and you can get all 3 sports for the same low cost. We super appreciate all the people that are out there supporting us on the podcast. You can like, rate, and review the podcast wherever you listen to it as well. And we hope you have a happy Turkey Day. Doug and I will both be in chat tonight, and then we'll have those awesome NFL lineups for you tomorrow. And yeah, until we see you on the podcast next time, have a good one.